powerful jug.
Here we go. 4, 3, 2. Hello, Eve Edwards. What's going on, my friend?
Not much, my man.
What's that shirt? What is it? A moon smiley face?
Yeah, graffiti in the moon.
Oh.
You know me and my smiley faces.
Yeah, people would graffiti the moon if they could get up there. Right? That's probably the first thing they're going to have to worry about with these Virgin flights. They're planning on going there. People leaving some shit that you could see from Earth, you know?
Yeah, pissing everywhere.
Dude, so much to talk about. So much going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world of MMA and the world of Thug Jitsu.
Yeah, your world, MMA, even boxing. There's a lot of shit going on in boxing. Yeah. Looks like we're going to get Deontay Wilder on Monday. He's going to be in here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's saying, did you see the video on his Instagram? He shows that it's more than 10 seconds.
Yeah.
It is. It's a fact. I mean, he plays the clock. As soon as Tyson Fury goes down, then it's more than 10 seconds before he gets back up.
The only problem with that is, I mean, it's human error, right? You can't start immediately.
Right.
You know, there's always that little space of time.
Isn't there supposed to be a guy on the sideline, though, that starts the count?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yep.
And then he picks it up with 5, 4.
Right.
Yeah. But the problem is referees, you know, when they're in the heat of the battle, the fucking adrenaline, their seconds, it's not like they have a stopwatch in their hand. They hit it every time a guy goes down, which why don't they have?
Probably, it's too much to remember. We're just talking about the heat of the moment.
Boom, click. Is that too much to remember? I mean, think about all the shit Tyson Fury has to remember.
You know, that's all instinct, right?
Yeah.
Fury, I mean, that fight. I wanted, of course, I'm rooting for Wilder because I like big knockouts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he looked good in the first two rounds, and then he just looked like he abandoned the game plan, and he was just looking for the knockout after that.
Well, he's got a problem. The problem is he can knock anybody the fuck out. That's a problem.
Anybody except that guy, except Tyson Fury.
It seems like he almost knocked him out. Like
he knocked him out.
Yeah.
He was out.
If it wasn't, I mean, he definitely did 10. He was definitely down for 10. But here's the thing. If the referee, instead of saying 8, said 7, instead of saying 6, said 5, would he have gotten up quicker? I think he probably would have. Because he's waiting for 8, 9, and then he's standing up. Because he's trying to give himself, he's an old vet, he's trying to give himself as much recovery time as he can.
I don't know. When I watch him getting up, I look at that replay, and you see his head. Like, his head comes up like he's trying to get up, and he can't. And then he just, like, stands up like a zombie. I think that's some gypsy shit, man. It's like... That's scary.
Well, I did not expect him to get up. I was
celebrating
the fight.
Yeah,
were you?
Yeah.
So was,
I was with my
so
uncle. Yeah, Wilder. Fuck yeah, yeah.
Wilder was celebrating too. The thing was, like, when he went down, I went, oh shit, I can't believe he knocked him out in the 12th like that. And it was the left hook going down that was the craziest.
Yes.
It was boom, the right hand, then bang, the left hook going down. It was so insane.
And he walked off. It was a walk-off. It was a walk-off knockout.
And he was dancing. And he was pointing to his woman in the audience, and she was saying, I love you. And he was like, the whole thing was a celebratory moment. And then the look on his face when he realized that Tyson Fury had gotten up, like, what?
Yeah. You know what that is? Remember the 80s and 90s, the Friday the 13th movie?
Yeah.
When you kill Jason?
Yeah.
And then you turn around, it's like, oh, shit, that motherfucker is still here.
And he would just rise like a full sit-up.
That's what that was.
How does Wilder punch so hard? As a man who studied martial arts his whole life, like, there's some dudes, right? Don't you think?
Yeah.
They have some freak
that
thing.
That explosive power.
But
right?
It's crazy how much he's got. He's only 212 pounds. That's the crazy thing. It's like, he's very small for a heavyweight. Like, a lot of these guys, 250.
Remember a guy named Mike Tyson?
Oh, yeah. He was like in the 215s, yeah. Right? He was like 215.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not
he
much
hits
different.
Like a truck. I don't know how, I mean, I didn't have that kind of power. My knockouts were from, like,
technique.
Stuff you didn't see.
Yeah.
You know, and quickness. But like a guy like Jeremy Stevens hits like that, you know? Melvin Gillard had that kind of power. How do you develop? I don't know if you could develop that. I think that's a natural thing.
Yeah, Rumble Johnson type power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think you can develop that.
I don't think so.
I think you can accentuate it. I think if a guy hits hard with better technique, he can hit harder. I think it's a bone structure thing. I mean, it's like if you look at Deontay, he's kind of built like a gigantic Tommy Hearns.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just wide in the shoulders, and his back is just a fucking bundle of, like, sea
muscle.
Ropes.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like those thick-ass ropes that they use for boats. You know what I mean? When they moor ships, that's like the muscles in his back, just jacked back. That's where all the power comes from, I guess.
You should let him body shot you.
Fuck all that. Fuck all that, dude.
Yeah, that dude's a scary dude, man.
Yeah, he hits harder than anybody, I think, in recent memory. Like, his one-shot power, it's ridiculous.
What do you think? I mean, Tyson was a better boxer. Better, yes. Pure boxer, too. So, but, like, I would love to see, like, big power punchers. Like, they need to make a boxing game where they have all the... And I'm, yeah. I guess they might have. I don't know. But they need to have one where they have, like, all the power punchers and do, like, a power puncher tournament.
Right. Well, you know what? I feel like it was a perfect boxing match because you have in Tyson Fury, first of all, you have this guy that overcame depression and suicidal thoughts and, you know, drug addiction and alcoholism. I mean, he was just...
Obesity.
He was living in a world of depression. He was just drinking constantly and doing coke and fucking his life up. And then loses more than 100 pounds, cleans himself up, gets in there against the scariest guy in the heavyweight division, and puts on a boxing clinic. However, he still gets clipped. He still gets clipped not once, but twice hard and dropped hard, especially in the 12th round. So it's like for a person who loves watching fights, it's such a perfect fight because you've got – so first of all, they're both great guys. Like both guys. Like you – if you're a fan of, like, exceptional human beings, both guys are great guys.
Yeah.
Like, the more I see Deontay Wilder interact with his family, talk about things, talk about the way he approaches fighting, the more I appreciate what he's doing, you know? And then Tyson Fury, how do you not love the guy? And the way they exchanged, like, pleasantries after the fight was over, and Tyson was telling him he loved him, and he kissed his fucking fist. I mean, it was great all around, a great feeling after. Even though it was a draw, it was like, I felt good about it.
That was Rocky One.
It was Rocky One.
That's what that was.
It was Rocky One.
Right?
It was Rocky One. Sort of, right? But it wasn't the slugger that won. You know, I mean, what it was just a great.
But nobody won.
Nobody won. Yeah.
In Rocky
the first
one,
right?
Yeah.
It was a great, great boxing match. That's what it was. It was like it had all the good elements.
It was the best heavyweight fight I've seen in a long time. I mean, that might have been better than Holyfield Tyson.
That's hard to say because I know. Holyfield was like the good guy coming in against the bad guy. Like there was so much to that fight. And then with Tyson, like you thought he was invincible. And then Holyfield just eating his shots and slowly beating him down. And then eventually stops him. I don't know.
He gets his ear bitten. Was it bite?
No, that was
the second
fight.
One, right? Yeah.
Second fight. Yeah. Yeah, that was a... It was one of the best. I'll tell you what, though, man. Anthony Joshua versus Klitschko was one of the best in a long time before that.
Yeah.
You know? They're going to goad that fella into a fight. someone's gonna trick that fella into a fight.
I want to see that three-way mix, you know?
Yeah, I think Joshua better stay the fuck away from Wilder. If I was in his corner, I was like, dude, you get hit sometimes. You don't want to get hit anytime by that guy.
Right? he's trying to avoid him. I mean, he's got his head movement going now.
Yeah. I know. He's waking up in the morning. Like, just fucking bobbing and weaving. It's like the dudes like that, the consequences of getting clipped are so great. It's so interesting when someone has that kind of power.
Yeah.
The consequences are just so great. They're different than anybody else.
Because you never stop watching. Never stop watching. That fight with Tyson Fury, I mean, we saw the gap getting bigger in the points,
mm-hmm.
but then that ninth round hit.
Yeah.
And he dropped him. And it's like, yeah, see, he could still do it. And you're watching. And then the 12th round, he hit him. And then, you know, if you're a Wilder fan like me, you're jumping up and you're celebrating your victory. And then fucking zombie gets up.
Dude. I'm so impressed. Not only did he get up, he won the remaining part of the round. He stung Wilder, had him back off.
Like, that can't, well, I guess it could, but it doesn't really happen in MMA where somebody just gets destroyed or dominate. I guess in MMA it would be like a bad beating in one round, and then the next round you come out and you're just like fresh. Because when he dropped him and when Fury got up, and he looked at him, you know, he was a little bit broken, but he's probably like, all right, I'm going to take this motherfucker out.
Right.
And then Fury put it on him a little bit.
Yeah.
And that probably, not broke his spirit, but that probably made him kind of shrink up a little bit. You
know? He got lit. I mean, he definitely got stung.
He got cracked.
Yeah. And you see him, like, his eyes roll back. He backed off a little bit. And then he grabbed a hold of Tyson. Yeah. I'm like, whoa, he got rocked. Yeah. Look, both guys are incredible.
Good conditioning too for heavyweights. I mean, to take shots that late, and because that's a lot about conditioning. When you get tired, you know your brain's ready to shut off.
Yeah, and to be that big. I mean, 6'9", 256 pounds, and still have that kind of conditioning. Yeah. You know, and Wilder, to carry that knockout power in the 12th after being frustrated and just whiffing a lot for 12 fucking rounds, that exhausts you.
Yeah, the punches you miss, that takes so much off of you.
Yeah.
It takes so much.
Yeah, yeah. It was just great all around. It was just great.
What was the best, what's the best boxing fight you can remember watching in your lifetime live? Not in person, but just watching it as it happens.
Wow, that's a good question. I think Julio Cesar Chavez versus Meldrick Taylor.
A lot of people say that. I didn't watch that one live.
Because Taylor was so good.
Yeah.
He was so fast, and he was winning up until the 12th round, and Chavez just kept the pressure. And then eventually, crack, crack, he hits him in the big right hand in the 12th round. You see Meldrick is just beaten down. The downside of that fight is Meldrick Taylor was never the same again.
Yeah.
That was one beating that just, he crossed over beyond the pale.
Yeah.
He went to the dark lands. It's just not good after that fight.
So what do you think if, was it Richard Steele who was the ref?
I think it was.
So Steele doesn't start that fight in those last seconds, and Meldrick Taylor wins on the cards. Mm. Then what happens? Is there a rematch? And does he look the same as he, like, was he the same guy after that?
I think if he wins, has a rematch, he's done. He's done no matter what. I mean, remember when Terry Norris knocked him out after that?
Yeah.
He just did not look like he could take a punch anymore. Yeah. That fight was so brutal. If you watch that fight again, Chavez just constantly raking his body and clipping. But Meldrick was just so fast and so skillful, like his movement and his speed. But Chavez was just relentless.
Yeah.
It was a great fight.
It was a great fight. But I watched it after the fact. But
there's a few of those fights where you know that was the one, where the guy's never going to be the same again.
Yeah. You felt that way at watching it?
No, I felt that way afterwards.
Okay.
I mean, watching it, you go like, what a great fight. But then afterwards, you realize like, oh, that was it. That was the fight.
I kind of felt that way. Honestly, for MMA, I felt that way about Rory after the Rory Robbie fight.
Ooh, right.
Because then he fought Wonderboy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, he doesn't look the same.
Well, I think he was having real problems with his nose. You know, his nose has been shattered a bunch of times, and he just can't take a shot at it anymore. It just starts bleeding really bad. But I think physically, the way he moves and his ability to take punches is still exactly the same. Like, you saw him in the Lima fight.
Yep,
you know, he looks good still.
Yeah, he does.
He fucked up taking that Musasi fight, though.
Yeah.
Musasi's too big.
Too big. I thought the
too
same
good,
thing.
Too.
You know? Exactly. I mean, they have a lot of similar skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bigger guy. It's like, what's
Musasi might be a little better too.
Striking. Yeah. He's definitely better with his striking.
Yeah. His ground's no joke either.
Yeah.
Musasi's just so good, man. He's so good that, like, if I was in his corner, I'd be like, look, I get that you want to do a super fight. I get that you want to do a challenge. This guy's quite a bit bigger than you.
Yeah.
And really, really fucking good. Like, Musasi might be the best 185er in the world.
I mean, you think so?
If he's not, he's there. He's with Whitaker. He's with Yoel. He's there. There's the mix of them.
I really, really, like, I have a whole lot of confidence in Whitaker.
Me
like,
too.
Quietly, he just kind of rose up to the top, and I think people still sleep on him.
I think so too, but I got to say that I was surprised at the decision in the Yoel Romero fight.
The second
last one.
Yeah.
I was like, I think Romero won that fight.
Yeah.
Or if not won it, it was so close it had to be a draw. It was so fucking close. But I think Romero did way more damage. Romero hurt. See,
he hurt him a couple times.
The thing about like the Wilder fight, like someone said to me, like, oh, the scorecards are all fucked up. Tyson Fury should have won. Maybe I see what you're saying. If you're looking at it in terms of like that, but as a person who knows what a fight is, Wilder clearly won the fight. If it was a fight,
yeah,
right. Who's getting fucked up, right?
In the schoolyard, Wilder won that.
He won. Right, and this is the Yoel Romero Whitaker thing. Who won the fight? Whitaker's getting, you know, just he got hit with bombs by Yoel. Yoel hit him with some fucking haymakers, and Whitaker survived. But Whitaker never put Yoel in that same sort of situation where Yoel was staggering around like really badly hurt. I mean, look, Whitaker is a champ. I mean, the skills, the heart, the courage, all those things. I mean, he's got everything. He's a champ. But I felt like the damage done. I hate the 10-point musses.
Yes.
I fucking
especially
hate
for
it.
MMA.
Hate it.
I mean,
so stupid. Doesn't make any sense.
Does
you got 5-minute rounds. You're only using 10 points. Like, why? Because it was already there?
Exactly. That's the big thing for me because, I mean, we got aspects of jiu-jitsu. We got aspects of wrestling. We got aspects of striking, boxing, and kickboxing, right? And we're using a rule set from boxing only.
One set of weapons.
Yeah.
That's it.
And, like, how does that quantify the takedowns and the grappling exchanges? It's
right.
It's I don't know. I disagree. I remember they had all these different systems they were trying to work, and I feel like at one point, I think Doc Rivers maybe had
Doc Hamilton.
Doc Hamilton, sorry.
Yeah, he
Doc
had
Rivers is a basketball player.
Yeah, Doc Hamilton is an excellent system. Yeah. It was a half-point system.
Right.
Yeah, which was better. Was better than what we're using now.
The Pride system was better.
Yeah, the Pride system is better. Yeah. Judge the fight as a whole, and the last part of the fight is more important than the first fight of the fight.
Right.
Right.
Because that kind of tells you the path that we're going on.
Schoolyard.
Right.
Who's
exactly.
on top? Who's on top when the teachers get there? Who's beating the dude down when the teachers get there? Nobody cares if you're like throwing leg kicks and boxing a guy up for 15 minutes, and then the teachers come right when the guy gets on top of you and punching your face in. I won the decision. No. The teachers pull that guy off you.
Yeah. And then you get rematches.
Rematches in school, yeah. They're fucking hard to swallow. You gotta have balls to have that rematch in school.
Yeah.
Whew, here we
you
go
know
again.
What you're getting into, right? Yeah.
No money. All glory. Yeah. This has gotta be a rematch for this fight, and it's gonna be the biggest heavyweight fight of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gonna be Jai fucking Gantic. Yeah. And I'm happy for Wilder because Wilder is finally a star. I mean, forever we wanted an American heavyweight champion.
Yep.
Klitschko had it forever. Now we have not only an American heavyweight champion, but we had an American heavyweight champion that knocks everybody the fuck out. Knocks everybody the fuck out. Super exciting. Great guy. For some reason, he didn't catch. Like, it's weird. Like, who catches? Who gets famous?
Yeah.
It's weird.
But then when you look at the post-fight interviews and Tyson Fury, you know, God bless me, God bless you, God bless America.
Yeah.
I mean, he got a lot of people on his side. He's not American.
He's a great guy. He's great.
I've
had him in here. He's great. I mean, he's a real character. He's a real deal. Both of them are. I mean, I'm fucking so excited about the rematch.
When do you think that happens?
It's got to be a long time. He got hit with some booms. If I was in Tyson's camp, I'd be like, dude, we got to take some time off.
Yeah.
I know you feel great and you're riding this high. How about the guy donates all his money to charity? Isn't that incredible?
That's ridiculously incredible.
$10 million. Yeah. $10 million. Just donated it.
Is he going to do that in the rematch?
No. The rematch is $100 million.
10%.
He's banking on that Floyd Mayweather money.
Right.
The rematch could be the biggest heavyweight title fight ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bigger than right now, especially with the world, the way the world is. It's bigger than Holyfield Tyson. It's bigger than Holyfield.
It's bigger than Holyfield Tyson, I think. Or right there, at least.
Yeah.
Right there. It's hard to say because Tyson was such a cultural phenomenon. Like, there was no one like him. When we were kids and when Tyson would fight, it would just be like watching a public execution.
Yes.
And people would, like, wonder, should I pay for this? Should I get this pay-per-view? How long is it going to last? Have a bunch of people over popcorn and shit, and it lasts 15 seconds?
What do you think the benefit of Wilder having Tyson come into his next camp is? It's Tyson, I mean, he's a student. You know, he knows boxing well.
Is he doing that?
I don't know.
But what would the benefit be? Look, the benefit would be great. Mike Tyson knows a lot about boxing. I mean, he doesn't just know a lot about how he boxed.
History.
But he knows so much.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like one of the big things, one of the big stories about his childhood was him watching Jim Jacobs' old reel-to-reel films. He'd watch all those old-school films, Joe Louis and shit, and Jack Dempsey. You know, he like patterned a lot of his style after watching those old timers, Archie Moore, and I think he could definitely help him. I think, but the style of someone who could help Wilder would be someone who is going to incorporate more movement and more like switch up, like don't always throw bombs.
Yes,
you know who I would bring in if I was Wilder? Andre Ward. Andre Ward and Virgil Hill.
Yeah.
Have those guys tighten up what he does. I think Andre Ward's one of the smartest guys in boxing.
How is he as an instructor, as a teacher?
He's too fucking smart to not be good at it.
Right.
He's too smart. He knows too much about boxing. Like, he's one of my favorite analysts when he talks about fights, like the way he breaks things down.
Yes.
You know, and he's a guy who really does find weaknesses and exploit them. It's not just pushing buttons and throwing haymakers. Like, if you look at his rematch with Kovalev, like, he figured that fucking guy out. Like, he got hurt by him early in the first fight, but then won the remainder of the fight, and then won the decision, a little bit controversial, but then said, I know how to beat this motherfucker, and then came back and in the second fight and stopped him.
Yeah. Yeah, Andre Ward is, and Virgil Hill. That's old school, though.
Old school.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a good fit, but there's a lot of good fits in boxing, you know?
Yeah.
Boxing is an interesting thing, is that they've had this long history of trial and error that MMA hasn't had. You know, like, you see this, you know, you got lineage that goes back to the 60s and the 70s, and
lineage goes back way further than that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Willie Pep.
Sure. I mean, in terms of, like, active trainers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and active gyms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys have been around forever. Yeah. They've been putting champions into rings for decades. And there's a lot of those guys out there.
I think about that, too, with Tyson. I mean, like, if Customato didn't die when he did, would Tyson's career have been different?
It probably would have. It probably would have been different. I mean, I think Kevin Rooney did his best to try to keep that teaching going. But I think sometimes that mentor is the glue that keeps you together.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other stuff.
That guy meant so much to Tyson because Customato essentially gave him this new lease on life.
Yeah.
He thought he was going to be a loser and his life was going to be hell. And then instead, he's the heavyweight champion of the world, the youngest ever, you know?
Yeah.
But then, but you know what? Teddy Atlas had a very, very interesting take on Tyson. He just felt like Tyson never developed the skills to overcome adversity. So, like, as long as he was dominating everyone, he was great. But as soon as it started coming back in him, he would never recover from that.
You know, we call that in MMA, a bully.
Yeah, or a front runner.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys like that, right?
Yeah, and good on top.
Yes, they're good hammer, not such a good nail. Yeah.
You got to be able to take them both.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you say hammer and nail, it reminds me of, like, there was something I was thinking when we were talking about Rory and Robbie. Like, what it takes, how much pain you have to be in to be a fighter, of Rory's caliber, and then just sit down and concede.
Yeah.
Because, like, it hurts that much.
I think his face was shattered. I think his nose was, like, broken into 8 or 9 pieces or some shit like that. It was just mush. And I just don't think he physically could go on anymore.
Like, I've had breaks in training. I've had breaks in fights. Broke my jaw once training. I was like, oh, that hurts. And then I got hit again. I was like, yeah, I can't do this. Then
was it a clean snap?
No, it was just a hairline. But, like, it hurt. Like, I couldn't chew. I was crying the next day. Like, ugh. I didn't know it was broken until the next day. But and then when I fought Ludwig, when Bang and I fought, I was on top. He was on his back. He throws a punch upwards, hits me right in the eyeball. And bust my orbital.
Yeah, you were talking about this the last time you were here. Yeah, and that is crazy.
When he hit me, though, I was like, that hurts. Oh, I put my head down for a second. Then I was like, I got to tap this guy. So I'm just trying to, institute a jiu-jitsu game. And he's escaping all the time. But the pain, it wasn't like I want out. For Rory to sit down and concede, like, I can only imagine. Because I've been in pain in a fight. Like, excruciating pain is like, I just got to figure this out and move on. But he was just like, no, that's enough. And it's Rory. We know how tough he is. He's crazy. Like, this is a dude who you know, he's like, you just kind of expect him to have bodies. Have bodies on him.
Did you see him when he was on the podcast?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that episode.
He's not like you would think he is. He's a great guy.
He is.
He's like very like warm and friendly.
He's awesome. I sat next to him on the bus a bunch of different times. We were just riding to the arena. We've had a bunch of conversations. I love him. But when you see his demeanor or his persona when he's in front of the camera, he just seems very.
He's very serious.
Yeah, very serious and that killer like, that, yeah, that he's serial a fucking killer. Like.
I mean, he is. He's not done either. I mean, yeah, I think no. the Musasi fight was a bad idea, but I still think he's one of the best welterweights on the planet.
100%.
Sure. Yeah.
100%. I mean, he can come. I mean, he can come back to the UFC and threaten Tyron. Again,
oh yeah, I think so. I mean, he beat Tyron the first time, but that's a different Tyron. Tyron with Duke Rufus is a different Tyron.
Yeah,
and for I think. Sure. You know, he's just, he knows more now. He's a champion now. He's successfully defended his title several times now.
He's much better, too. He's he still slows later in the fight, but, like, it's drastically different than it used to be. And once, what I would like to see out of Tyron is more use of all of his skills later on and not just looking to land that big right hand because, like, Tyron can do everything. Tyron can do everything, but there are those times when you see him start to really depend on that right hand and only look for that. And he's like, right hand, wait, right hand, right hand, right hand.
The thing about that right hand, though, is it works.
Yeah.
When you have something like Wilder's right hand or like Tyron's right hand, you have something that can, you have a right hand that could put anybody out. I mean, this is, I've brought up this up before, but think about it. He fought Darren Till and he fought Wonderboy twice. Those are two guys that are arguably the best strikers in the 170-pound division. Fuck both of them up on their feet. I mean, both fights, Wonder Boy was on Queer Street. And then in the Till fight, the only punch landed at all was by Tyron.
Right.
He cracks Till, drops him. Till never landed, touched him with a glove. Drops him, beats the shit out of him, and then chokes him.
I think that was one of the best performances from Tyron. He looked really good in that fight. Really good.
He looked almost like disdainful, too. Like, you know, you motherfuckers, I can't believe you guys got him the betting favorite.
Yes.
Like, what is that shit?
It's like,
the guy beats Cowboy Cerrone, a guy who's supposed to be fighting at 155 pounds. It's tough as shit, but one big fight, and all of a sudden you guys have him the betting favorite?
Yeah.
This is preposterous.
Put some respect on my name.
Yeah, well, he's a polarizing figure for some reason. I don't know why. It's maybe it's one of those things where guys have to catch, you know? Like, maybe it's like if Tyron, like, had a GSP fight. Like, if GSP comes out of retirement, fights Tyron, Tyron smashes GSP, then maybe people will go.
I wonder, like, what Muhammad Ali was like, because I wasn't there.
Right.
Like, everybody loves him now.
Yeah.
But did they love him when he was, you know, running his mouth? And, like, I'm sure people did. I'm sure that he had his... You know, like the Conor McGregor fans, you know, because he was that good. But I wonder if there was this big contingent of people that were like, yeah, no, we hate that Muhammad Ali guy.
Well, he was really that good, but then he wasn't. See, what happened was, what got really crazy with Ali was they made him take 3 years off of fighting.
Yeah.
And during that 3 years, he was supposed to be fighting in Vietnam. He's like, fuck you, I'm not going to Vietnam.
Right.
So they strip him of his title, and then he doesn't train. I mean, when he came back, did you ever see his comeback fight?
Nope.
He came back against Jerry Quarry. And I'm telling you, man, he looked like he had no muscle. Like, you look at him from the old days. Like, look when he fought Cleveland Big Cat Williams. I mean, he was just a Greek god. But then you see him when he's coming back and he's fighting Quarry. 3 years out of the ring, probably barely trained at all. His body just looked slower and smoother. He just didn't look the same. Like, physically, see if you can find that. I mean, and Jerry Quarry was just a super tough guy, just would walk forward and eat a bunch of shots. But you look at his body, like, it doesn't look the same. See, look at his back. He doesn't, I mean, he obviously went through a full camp to get ready for that, but he doesn't look like the Muhammad Ali of old. And then when he's fighting, he doesn't move like the Muhammad Ali of old. Those 3 years took a toll on him. Like, look at his body. It just doesn't look the same.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks a little smaller.
Yeah, smaller because he hasn't been training. So he probably lost a lot of muscle, just looks smoother, and just doesn't look as quick or as good. And he's fighting a guy that has no business in the ring with him. You know, he's fighting a guy that, I mean, and Jerry Quarry's a sad story when it comes to brain damage, too. Like, the end of his life, was horrible. I mean, he had fought so many times against big punchers and was known for being able to take a punch. And then also, I think coming up, I think it was his brother also had like a real problem with brain damage. I think they did a lot of real hard sparring together and a lot of hard sparring in the gym. And the end of his life was awful. I read an article about what it was like at the end for him, and it was similar to what the end was like for Ali.
It's I don't know. I always, when someone says something, it makes me think of something else. And you talking about Corey and his brother made me think of Joe Lozon and Dan Lozon fighting in the yard.
Yeah. When they would have those barbecues,
yes.
Beat the shit out of each other. Yeah. Like legit beat the fuck out of each other. Yeah.
I don't know if horrible. I could do that to my family.
They had a different kind of friendship.
That's so funny.
It's crazy. Those videos of Joe on top of him, punching him in the head from behind. I'm like, whoa, Joe.
That's not. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. It's like, that's not a stranger, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's some of the toughest guys grew up with brothers. There they are right here, beating the shit out of each other.
This is what I was thinking of.
The thing is, though, this is Massachusetts, man. Massachusetts is a fucking hard-ass place. And they're fighting. I mean, they're full blast kicks and punches.
And then their entire family is watching, too.
And they're having a real legit MMA fight.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that. That's so, what a bunch of psychos. They got little girls watching and shit. And they're on the grass. And he's beating the shit out of his brother. And he's better, too. Yeah. Look at what kind of psycho family are the Lozons? look at those little girls in front of the fucking car. The whole family sitting there. Oh, Uncle Joe is beating the shit.
Oh,
they put a soundtrack on it. Oh, that's hilarious.
That's awesome.
Yeah, let's not watch this. I like both these guys. You got them in a triangle. Oh, about Tyron though. Like I don't. I mean, look, when Ali was the whole thing about him. Refusing to fight in the draft, like people hated him.
Yeah,
there was a lot of people that hated him, a lot of people that considered themselves patriots that thought, because before, we have to realize, like, now pretty much everybody thinks the Vietnam War was a terrible idea.
Right.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident, which got everybody into Vietnam, was a false flag. It was all bullshit. We shouldn't have been there in the first place. Who knows what the real reason for being in Vietnam was, but a lot of people think it had to do with heroin and money and all kinds of other crazy shit, right? So when Ali said, I'm not fighting in that war, back then people thought he was a coward.
Right.
Back then people thought he was a traitor and he was aligned with Malcolm X. He changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, and everybody was worried about the Black Panthers and the Black Muslims. And, you know, it was like there was a lot of hate towards him, I'm sure. And so then when he came back and he was not the same guy anymore, I'm sure people loved it. They were happy. They were happy when Joe Frazier beat him. People were happy.
Yeah, these people, yeah. That's human nature, right?
It is. People pick sides. Yeah. Like you pick sides when Wilder knocked down Fury.
Yeah, yeah.
We pick sides. I don't. Yeah. You mean you don't know those guys, right?
No, but like it. I'm also not going to hate on him. You know what I mean? That's the thing. I'm not hating on Fury. I wasn't like fuck Fury. No, I'm
but you
like,
were also a successful professional fighter. You're not just a regular hater.
Yeah,
you're just a dude watching.
I'm a special
fights.
Kind of hater, Joe.
You're a successful former fighter who fought in many different organizations. Like, for you to be rooting on somebody, it feels different to me. It's okay.
Okay. I'm glad I got the stamp of approval.
If he just doesn't feel... I get it. You like a style. I mean, who doesn't like knockouts?
Right?
Who the fuck doesn't like knockouts?
Everybody loves a knockout.
Gotta love it, man.
Like, Jeremy Stevens is a guy I love to watch fight, right? Like, when I was fighting him, that's a different story, but like watching him fight, yes, I want to see that every time. But then when I'm fighting him, I want you to root for me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He had a terrifying style. Yeah. Still has a terrifying style. He's just do or die. If Jeremy connects, you can be Foxville. And he carries that power deep into a fight. Yeah. You know?
Remember when he was young and he fought RDA?
Yes.
Yeah.
That uppercut.
Yeah.
And that was a highlight reel uppercut for a long time.
Remember
did you see the Usman fight? RDA and Usman?
I saw the end of it.
Dude.
You know, the last round.
Usman's a motherfucker.
Usman's dangerous. I was at Bellator with Schilling and Bamba. Did you see Schilling's fight?
Schilling looked great.
Right?
He looked great.
Man. He looks like a completely different guy. We were in the dressing room warming up. He's warming up and he's hitting mitts. And my first thought was, yeah, he looks like he's ready to defend some takedowns.
Yeah.
He's sitting low. Yeah. He's more comfortable. Like, yeah,
he's a different dude.
He's very different. He's got to that point where you, it's not uncomfortable to wrestle. Like, yeah. He didn't know what to do for a long time. Right. And I've been gone for a while. He came back, and he was out there with Cowboy and Mickey and Jafari Veneer, and those guys really helped him. And I'm rolling with him, and I'm like, oh, this is a different character now.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, this is not going to be easy. I better tap him now while I can. You know?
Well, he's a world-class kickboxer. So, and when it comes to the stand-up game, he's going to have an advantage over almost everybody as long as he can defend takedowns and as long as he fights smart. You know, if he doesn't fight recklessly, which is, you know, he has in the past, that Japanese fellow that knocked him out twice.
Yes.
What's that guy's name? Kakuna? What's it? No, that's not his name.
I'm horrible with Japanese names. They all sound the same.
That guy's a beast, though. That guy hits fucking hard, that dude.
Joe hits hard.
Joe does hit
Joe hits hard.
Hisaki Kato.
Hisaki Kato, yeah. That guy is a beast, though. That guy fought him MMA and then fought him kickboxing. I mean, that's what a beast that guy is. And he's not really a kickboxer as much as he is an MMA fighter.
But Joe's turning into an MMA fighter. You saw his hips?
For sure.
You saw him sprawl? You saw him...
Dude, everything. And on top, you know, like secured top position, held him. Yeah. Ground and pound was kind ferocious.
Kind of good vicious ground and pound, right?
Real strikers have horrific ground and pound because they just can generate so much more power from the top. It's just terrifying, you know?
Yeah, now he knows how to control his hips when he's on the ground. Yeah. That's just a different story. Mm-hmm. I want to see where he goes. Now he's like, it's weird because now he's like a prospect in a different way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, he just needed to fix that one piece of his game. And he fixed that one piece of his game, the grappling and the takedown defenses. Yeah.
I want to see Joe get to the point where he's completely comfortable on the ground. He's close to it. But like, and 2 or 3 years down the road, him and Stylebender.
Ooh.
Right?
Stylebender's a special kind of dude.
Yeah, he is.
He's a special kind of dude. That Derek Brunson fight showed it. It's like, this is a special kind of dude.
I like that kid. Whew. He's fun to watch, man.
He's slick.
Yeah.
He's slick. Yeah. He's fighting Anderson next.
I don't like that.
For Anderson?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like these fights where, like, I didn't like Yair and BJ.
Right.
I don't like these fights where like these guys who've done so much for the game are kind of getting fed to the wolves in their twilight.
But every now and then you get a Shogun Tyson Pedro fight, which the fucking old lion roars again. Right? Did you see that fight?
I missed all the UFC fights this weekend because of Bellator and the boxing match.
Shogun returned from adversity too. He got hit hard in that fight. He got staggered and fucked up, and Tyson poured it on, but couldn't keep it up, and then Shogun got him to the ground, smashed him up a bit, got him standing up, hit him with a big right hand at the end of the fight, dropped him, and then beat the fuck out of him on the ground. It's like, it was for me, when I saw that fight announced, Tyson Pedro versus Shogun, I was like, damn, Shogun's got another hard fight. It's hard watching Shogun get knocked out a bunch of times, you know?
Yes.
But he won, and he won in a big way, and he won in a war. It was a war. He's still a fucking badass, man. How is Shogun still so goddamn aggressive, too? Like, he's not slowed down. It was, like, real frantic and aggressive, and it was awesome, man.
That's this thing inside you, right? You can't get rid of that.
Well, some dudes, they lose a bit of it when they take too much punishment. They lose some of the ferocity or some of the enthusiasm or whatever the fuck it is. But one of the things I was watching that fight, I was like, God damn, Shogun's ferocious. Still ferocious. Just everything about it, like, when he had the dude hurt, he was fucking pouring it on. But he was pouring it on in a demonic way.
Yeah.
Like a monster.
Like he was enjoying it.
Like he was Shogun.
Yeah.
Like the Shogun of old, man. Yeah.
Oh, is this it?
Yeah, okay. This is it. I mean, he fought really well, too. Like his ground game was real solid. His ground and pound was real solid. But it was also like his the exchanges, he would be, when he would find openings, he was frantic and like very real aggressive.
Yeah.
It was an awesome fight, man.
Yeah, man. I had a fight past this.
Yeah, it was a FS1 thing. I don't know, when do they put those FS1 fights on Fight Pass?
I think it's like a month.
Is that what it is?
I think.
Go further ahead of this, because this is a long period where Tyson was trying to secure Kimura.
You don't go overseas, right?
Not anymore, son. No, those would cripple me, man. Those overseas things. There's where you dropped them with the right hand.
Yeah.
They would wreck me for a week and a half afterwards. I'd be exhausted. Fly to fucking Brazil or fly to Australia's the worst.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, Brazil, isn't that just like north-south pretty much?
It is, but it's still 16 hours on a plane.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. You got to fly to Miami, and then you got to fly 10 more hours to Rio.
It's 10 hours from Miami to Rio?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that far.
Yeah. South America, son. That's a whole nother country. It's a different continent. I loved being there. I hated getting there. I hated going home. I hated how I felt afterwards.
Yeah.
And I'm just too busy. It's too costly for me financially to take that much time off. And it's just too hard for me physically, you know?
So if they compensated you for the time, it's still
nope.
physically.
Nope.
That's it's that over. Fuck you money, Joe.
Yeah. Fuck you. But you know what the other problem is, man? This fucking TV and watching on Fight Pass or doing Fight Companions, you know?
Yeah.
Those Fight Companions are the shit.
Yeah, those are fun. I did that one with you and Joe.
Yeah, we did one for Glory. Yeah, yeah. We got to do another one.
Well, definitely. Yeah. Do one for UFC.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, let's pick one.
You got it. You know what? Where are you going to be for New Year's?
I'm going to be on vacation.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, man, if you're here, do a fight companion for the PFL finals.
Oh, for PFL. Yeah, so tell me about the PFL. So you're doing commentary for the PFL?
Commentary and Telestrator.
And who else is doing it with you?
Randy and Boss.
What a combination.
Right?
What a fucking combination.
Like when I got that call and they were like, yeah, and the team is going to be you, Randy, and Boss. I'm like, wait, fuck. You just put my name in the same sentence with those dudes as equals? And it's like, for me, like I get like some fight fans maybe thinking, yeah, that makes sense. But like for me, I'm like, these are guys I looked up to. You know, and now you're talking, I get to hang out with them and, you know, we're having a drink at the bar.
That's pretty amazing. You know what I mean? But listen, dude, you're a really good commentator.
Thank
you, man. You're a really good analyst, too. I loved watching you in the Fox desk. I loved the way you break down things. You know, one of the cool things about that desk is you'll have like a Michael Bisping or you have Tyron or, you know, Kenny Florian, whoever it is. Everyone's got their own idea of how to fight and what's important and what they think is going to be a problem in a fight. Like, that's such a great move to have these ex-fighters and continue to, you know, Cormier's always doing it, continue to have them, you know, explaining from their own experience.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's that was the first thing for me because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know? Right. I have no idea what it is that I'm doing, but it's just talking about fights. And it's so much fun to be doing it with guys that are on that same level. You know, you're at home, you probably do it when you're at home and you're not doing a fight companion, you're watching fights or maybe some friends are around, they ask you things about fights and you're like, you have to explain it to people who don't understand. But when you're having a conversation with somebody who knows what's going on, and then you can, especially when you come to a point where you disagree.
Yeah.
Because you have strong opinions why, and you have strong arguments as to why you're right and why the other guy's wrong. And I don't know, I love those moments, man. I love having those things, especially being able to do that with guys who know what they're talking about.
Oh, it makes it so much more fun. When you're doing it with guys who know what they're talking about, what's one of the cool things about Fight Companion is that we're, except when Brian Cowan starts talking. Just kidding, Brian. But when you're doing it, like, everybody's got their own opinion of how something could go down or what's going to be a problem. A lot of times you agree, you know, like the Till Tyron Woodley fight. Well, Till's chance is standing up.
Right.
That's it. And, you know, if I was Tyron, I'd take him to the ground. I mean, Tyron's a far better wrestler, far much more experienced. But, like, there's some fights where you're like, man, here's one this weekend. Brian Ortega, Max Holloway.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows how that's going to go? Like, I've bounced that one around my head, and people have come up to me on the street, like, hey, man, who's going to win this fight this weekend? Like, especially Hawaiians.
Yeah.
Hawaiians are super excited for Max Holloway to win again. I mean, he's the new BJ Penn, right?
Man.
It may be a different level. You know, Max Holloway is a motherfucker.
That's one of those fights. Yeah, it's very hard to pick. Was that even? It's pretty even?
It's got to be. I mean, let's see what the Vegas odds are. By the way, I love the fact that you can actually gamble on fights now online. Like, it's legal, it's basically, legal. Right?
Yeah.
You can kind of do it, right?
Yeah. If you were a fighter, would you mind on yourself?
Depending on the state you're in.
Too much pressure. I wouldn't want to think about it. Unless I knew. Unless the guy was a fucking asshole. And he like, I'm going to go smash this dude. Like, there's just no.
It's very close. They're both minus 105, minus 125, which would be Holloway as the favorite, slight favorite.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That should be how it is. Slight favorite because he's the champion.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting, what Holloway said, and he goes, He goes, it's kind of weird when the new thing is older than the current thing. Because it's like, I'm younger, man. I'm the fucking champ. I beat Aldo. I beat all these dudes. I'm younger, and yet this guy's the new thing coming up to right. challenge me. It's like, motherfucker, I'm the younger fighter. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, we haven't seen something like Ortega a little bit in the featherweight division. Guy submitting, like yeah. pulling these submissions off to, like the one with Cub.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that was beautiful. Like, he readjusted on that guillotine too. And that's probably the hardest submission to readjust.
Mm-hmm.
You know? One hand hanging on, readjusting, yeah. and then still sinking it in against Cub Swanson. It's not like Brandon Bishop or whoever. It's right. Cub Swanson.
yeah.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? That's crazy, man.
Well, he's a direct lineage, right? He's real Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. He is Henner and Huron. You know, he comes from Horion. That school, I mean, this is where Brian Ortega comes from. He's direct from those mats.
Yeah.
And his technique is like a razor blade. It's so sharp. It's so sharp and precise and so honed, and just through drills and a constant emphasis on proper leverage and position. I mean, they're sticklers to that old style of jiu-jitsu. Like, and some people, there's an unfortunate word that people like to use that sometimes pisses people off. Like, Vinny Magalhães used this to describe Minotauro, and he didn't mean it in a negative way, but he meant the basics. He's like, his jiu-jitsu is very basic. And people go, fuck you, my jiu-jitsu is basic?
Yeah.
But the basic is, like, the best.
The fundamentals.
But there's guys that have those basics, like Hodger Gracie. His jiu-jitsu he's mostly the basics. He's not doing any crazy De La Riva shit or anything that you've never seen before. Like, what was that?
Bolos.
Yeah, he's not doing anything where you never saw it before.
Yeah.
It's strict, you know, guard pass, smashing on top, triangle, mount, arm triangle, arm bar. Everything he does is classic jiu-jitsu. But it's just so perfect. Everything, the leverage and the weight and the emphasis on, you know, certain positions over others. It's all like basic classic jiu-jitsu, and that's Brian Ortega.
Yeah.
His jiu-jitsu is just so rock solid fundamentals, you know?
He's all about fundamentals, though.
Yeah, man.
Even his box, he's not, I don't believe he's as good a boxer as Max, but he's fundamentally sound. Strong and direct with his boxing. I mean, look, he knocked out Frankie.
He knocked out Frankie. He submitted Moicano, who I think is one of the dark horses yeah. in that division.
Yeah.
Renato Moicano is a fucking yeah. beast, man. Bro, he's Mike so
Brown,
good.
Mike Brown has nothing but praise for him, man. He's like, that kid is legit. He's going to challenge for that title, for
sure. I believe
sure.
that. I believe you know? That. And he's super, like, respectful and intelligent, and, like, everything about him I like. I love his approach, the way he fights. And in that fight, Ortega made him shoot. Because he was beating him standing up.
Yep.
And he shot. And Ortega's like, thank you. Clink. That guillotine is just a death grip. He's just got a vice. Just clamps down on your fucking life.
Man. Like, that got to put you to sleep.
There's no room. Yeah. There's no room. You're going to sleep or you're going to tap. You're
and he's
not
a big kid.
Out.
He's yeah. like my size.
He's big.
Like, he's a big kid.
He's big.
Max is big, too.
Max is huge.
Yeah.
Max was 185 yeah. when they told him about the Khabib Nurmagomedov fight. The horrible thing about that fight was that he lost all that weight really rapidly for no reason. And then they wound up pulling him out of the fight.
Yeah.
The commission was like, fuck this, you can't fight. And a lot of us at the time were like, why is the commission telling a champion whether or not he can make weight? Let him try to make weight. Get the fuck out of there. Yeah. You don't know what you're doing. But then you find out after that, like, when he was preparing for the first fight with Ortega,
yep.
and he was experiencing these weird concussion-like symptoms, but they said he didn't have a concussion. And then people were saying, no, this is weight loss. This is rapid weight cutting. His body is responding to the fact that he just went through this, and now he's trying to do it again, and his body's rejecting it. So this is a bunch of theories. They're not giving us a whole lot of information about exactly what's wrong with him medically or what was wrong. Whether they know it or not, I don't know.
Right.
But even Ortega's been saying all week, like, what the fuck was wrong with him? How come they're not telling us? Like, what if it happens again? Like, Ortega's got to be thinking right now. Here we are today. It's Wednesday. Tomorrow's Thursday. The weigh-in's Friday. He only got a couple of days. Like, we don't know whether or not this is even actually going to happen, right? Like, right. What if it gets down to Thursday and Friday, and he's in the middle of the weight cut, and he starts blacking out, or he starts experiencing those symptoms again, they pull him out of the card? Moicano's on standby, you know.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's on standby for this fight.
That, yeah, see, and then it becomes an interim title?
It must. It has to. It can't be. They're not going to strip him.
But then what happens? I mean, a guy like Max, that, I don't know. It's one of those situations where it's like, if that happens multiple times, like, what do you have to do? Can you continue to, how much longer can you continue to fight at that weight?
I don't think he can continue to fight at that weight very much longer, because I think he severely compromises himself getting down to 45. But he's been able to do it because he's a champion. But, and I think if you do have a George Lockhart in your corner, a guy that gets you to do it scientifically and then rehydrate yourself scientifically, it can be done. And you can pull it off, and 24 hours later, you can fight at a very high level.
Yeah.
But is that the way to go? I mean, your kidneys start breaking down, your body starts getting beat up. I mean, your organs don't want to get dried out like that.
Yeah.
Your brain doesn't want to get dried out like that. Your muscles don't want to get dried out like that. There's just no way you perform at your best when you're just at death's door 24 hours ago, and now here you're fighting again.
Yeah. I mean, Frankie, you know, when he was fighting at lightweight, you know, that kind of shows you that you can be the smaller guy and do well. But it's weird because, like, now Frankie set a bar.
Yeah.
And now guys reach that bar, so Frankie had to change weight classes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a weird thing. And everybody's going to, I mean, it's the fight game. You try to get the best out of yourself, and you try to get the biggest advantage that you can. So the weight cut's going to always be an issue unless the weight classes are changed and or weigh-ins become same day.
Well, Josh Thompson just said recently that he thinks that the UFC is getting rid of the 125-pound division. They're going to put on a 165-pound division, which I think is very interesting. If they do a 165, I would like them to switch 170 to 175.
Yeah.
I think that would be wise. I don't think it's wise to have a 65 and a 75, but I do think a 65 and a 75 is great.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I 10 pounds...
10 pounds is good across the board.
Yeah, it's great.
I think across the board. I think we had every 10 pounds a weight class. I mean, a lot of people don't like the boxing thing where there's so many champions and so many weight classes, but who fucking cares? Who cares? Who cares that there's a welterweight and then a super welterweight?
Right.
Who cares that it's only 7 pounds difference?
This is more fights.
It's more fights. Yeah. It's more champions. It's more champion versus champion.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you want to see that? I want to see that.
I want to see the best and the best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're getting some of the best right now. You get the number. Let's say Kevin Lee, right? Kevin Lee could be a 165-pound champion.
Yes.
But,
and probably that's his weight class, too, right? Really. He probably struggles to make 155. He's a big fella.
He's a big dude. But then he can't do it anymore. But, like, Tyron wrestled at 165.
Right.
Imagine if he was still that age, you know, and he could fight at 165.
Bet Tyron can make 65. I bet Tyron can make 65. I think he can make 65. I definitely think he could fight at 75 and be at his best. And I think he could also fight at 85. I think Tyron has legitimate potential to be a three-division champion.
He should start rallying for that 65-pound weight class.
Nobody listens to me anymore, man. If they listened to me, Melvin Manhoef would have been in the UFC back in 2002.
Yeah.
You know, they listen to me sometimes. I think they listen to me with Ben Askren. I'm going to go on record, and I'm going to say I'm a big reason why Ben Askren got in the UFC. I brokered a meeting between him and Dana White.
Okay.
Dude, I put it together. I called Dana. I said, look, he's a good guy, man. He's talking shit, but everybody talks shit. Like, come on. I'm like, the guy's undefeated. And he's like, he was like, when Ambien wants to go to sleep, it takes Ben Askren. And I'm like, it's fighting. See, the thing about fighting is, it's not a matter of what is like what's exciting to watch. For a person like you, a person like me, who's like sitting by, how is this going to play out?
Yeah. What's going to work? What's going to work?
What works?
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. I want to see what works. When I see a guy like Ben Askren, I want to see what works. 3-1. Whoa, he's a 3-1 favorite over Robbie Lawler. Hmm. Holy shit. That's crazy.
They just added another fight to this card.
Listen, man, you can't sleep on Robbie fucking Lawler.
Nope.
Don't sleep on Robbie Lawler. That's crazy. That's crazy. 3-1?
3-1 is horrible.
Dude, Robbie Lawler can wrestle.
Yes, he
can.
Robbie
Lawler's been shutting people's lights out since the fucking early 2000s.
So that's a decent bet, then?
It's a fucking very good bet.
I would take the Robbie Lawler bet, especially him being
3-1?
Yeah.
100 to make 300?
Well, if it's plus 230, so you'd win 230.
Oh, he's a 3-1, so you'd have to win bet 3-1 on Askren.
Right, correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd take that bet. It's a good bet, but I like Askren's chances because I think that wrestling's just on another level.
Yeah.
That's the fight. Here's the fight. 165, Khabib, Ben Askren. Boom! Woo!
I guess Ben can make 65.
100% he can make 65. 100%. 100%. He wants to make 65 because he's good friends with Tyron.
Right.
And he's like, I'll be the 65-pound champ. Tyron be the 70 or 75, whatever they decide to go with. That's the fight, man. Khabib versus Ben Askren. Because I'm telling you, man, Ben Askren, they just put his face on the camera the other day while he was in the crowd, and the audience went crazy.
Yes.
He hasn't even fought in the UFC, and they love him.
Yeah. Real fight fans know who that guy is.
They know who he is now. Man. They know who he is now. Yeah. It's like he's been building momentum. The hardcore fans absolutely are excited that finally this undefeated phenom of a wrestler is fighting in the UFC.
Yeah. I would pay money to watch him.
Fuck
him,
yeah.
For sure.
Fuck
a lot of money.
Woo! I'll fly to Russia for that fight.
You think that's where they have it?
Fuck. I don't know, man. I'm going to fly to Russia. And
commentate that fight?
Yeah. And I'm going to, as soon as I get to my hotel room, I'm going to have one of them things that checks for bugs. I'm going to check for hidden cameras. And you go to Russia, man.
Check for Putin.
What's that?
Light up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, it probably would, right? The whole house is a fucking bug. Yeah, man, I think that's a fight that I'm very, very excited about. Because, like, right now, Khabib, the number one fight for Khabib, I believe, is Tony Ferguson. I think that's a big fight, giant fight. I'm real excited about that.
I like that. I heard rumors, and I haven't spoken to Dustin, of that whole Tony and Khabib, Dustin and Conor, winners fight each other.
I heard that too, but here's the cynical part of me. I know that Nate Diaz was supposed to be fighting Dustin, but Dustin had to pull out with a hip injury. So I'm like, okay, well, how bad is this hip injury, and when is that going to heal up? You know, and is it going to heal up, or is it going to like be a reoccurring thing? And them saying that Dustin is going to step in and he's going to fight Conor, that is a good fight, but does that make Nate Diaz go, what? And does that make Nate Diaz come back to the bargaining table?
Yeah.
And then they have because that's the big money fight.
Yeah.
The big money. If I was a promoter, I'm not a promoter. If I was a promoter, I'd be like, Nate, what do we got to do? We got to get weed. We got to get girls. What do I got to do? You want a new bike? What the fuck do I got to do? What do we got to do?
Give us some weed and we'll have a girl deliver weed on a new bike?
Like, for real, like, if you wanted to make money, and that's what I presume they all want to do, I mean, the reason why they want to have Brock Lesnar fight DC is because they want to make a shit ton of money, right?
Yeah.
Nate motherfucking Diaz! You want to make money? Mm-hmm. You call Nate motherfucking Diaz. Go party with him. Become his good friend. Lighten him up. Give him what he wants. Give him a lot of money.
That's a good fight. I mean, we saw it twice, you know?
It's not just a good fight. It's a gigantic, like, fan-friendly spectacle of an experience. Nate Diaz doesn't take any bullshit. You can't trash talk him. It doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work. It works the opposite way. It works the opposite way. Like, when Conor shit-talked Nate, Nate was like, fuck you. And I was like, what? Like, it didn't work.
I ain't gonna lie, man. One of my favorite Nate fights was him and Cowboy.
Oh, that was a great fight.
Right?
He got in Cowboy's head.
He did.
That was a good lesson for Cowboy, though. So an important fight for him in terms of like the path of his career.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he grew some from that.
Yeah.
But that third round, when Nate's standing there flipping him the bird.
How good did Cowboy look against Mike Perry? Holy shit. It's a new Cowboy.
Yep.
He looked different, man. He looked different. Just everything looked smooth and just like a goddamn executioner.
I heard rumors of that, too. I heard rumors of Cowboy and Conor.
That's a fight that I would make.
Yeah.
I would make that fight.
That's a fight, too.
That's a fucking exciting fight. And that's also a big sell. You could sell the shit out of that fight. That's a big fight. Ooh, but Cowboy has not been fighting at 55. You know, he's been doing majority of his fights.
That's another 165-pounder, though.
Yeah, how many fights has he fought? Till, he's fought Masvidal. Those are all 70s. Yep. You know, they're all 70 fights. Masvidal. Yeah.
Yeah. Perry.
I think.
There was only those three, or was there another one?
Leon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Leon Edwards.
Yeah. So that's, those are all 70s. Yeah, I don't think he's fought 55 in quite a while. No. I think he can still make it, though. It's not a big 70, you know?
Yeah.
Especially I think he was talking about going back to 55. Didn't he say something to you about that?
And, you know, and if they do have a 65-pound weight class, I mean, shit.
That's where he sits, for real.
Shit.
There's a lot of great fights at 65. Yeah. Cowboy and Kevin Lee.
Dude, anybody in Kevin Lee.
Yeah.
Kevin Lee's a beast, man. He's something special.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Lee's one of those dudes, you don't see him fight for 6 months, and then he gets in there, and you got a whole different animal in front of you. You got a guy with new skills, new momentum, new experience. He's just in that, I think he's 25 right now.
Yeah.
He's in that peak, prime, learning, growing, confidence part of his career, you know, where he's just a monster right now.
I don't know, man. Those guys are so much bigger than the guys from my day.
I know. At 55?
Yeah.
Kevin's like walks around 190 pounds. Yeah. He's a big guy.
Yeah. I'm retired. I'm no longer in this. I don't worry about my weight as much. And I stand next to these guys and they're still bigger than me.
Yeah.
It's like, how is that? Why is that?
Well, you know what's the craziest? DC.
Yeah.
You stand next to DC, he's like 5'10".
Yeah.
5'10", and he's like, he could be a middleweight. Picks up heavyweights, tosses them around, slams dudes, you know? I mean, when you see him with Derek Lewis, you're like, Derek has no business being in there with this dude. And Derek is a legit 265 murderer, knockout puncher from hell, and no business being in there with DC.
Nope. But then you saw that guy win, DC's training partner at the Affliction, not Affliction, at the Tito Chuck fight.
Oh.
He fought Tom Lawler.
Oh, I didn't see that fight.
Oh. Yeah, he's like 5'6".
Really?
Yeah.
5'6", 205. What is he, 85 or 205?
205.
Really?
Yeah.
5'6"?
Yeah.
Who is he?
I forget his first name. Wynn is his last name. He fought Tom Lawler. He trains with DC. And DC's like, yeah, this guy takes me down.
What?
Yeah, he's a good wrestler. But it's funny because he sprawled on Tom Lawler. But he's on his feet, like he's standing, but he's sprawled. Tom Lawler's on his knees, like on his knees, upright.
Wow.
And this kid is sprawled, I guess I'm older than him. Just this kid sprawled on his head. Yeah. But he can box too. But he's little. He looks a little awkward. He looks like a guy, you're in a Walmart parking lot, you talk shit to him because he's little.
Yeah.
He'll fuck you up, man.
Do you remember Dwight Muhammad Kawi?
No.
He used to be Dwight Braxton. He was the light heavyweight champion way back in the day. And then he fought Evander Holyfield as a cruiserweight. And Kawi was 195. He was 5'7". He was just a tank of a man. And he would come at you like this, just real low. He would get even lower. He was a tough, tough guy, man. Just and real thick. Like, you didn't see many dudes that were that thick back then. And he would wear his trunks way up high, so you'd have like this much body to hit, and it was all just jacked.
It's like the strike zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's making it smaller.
He was one of the first big tests for Evander Holyfield.
Yeah.
Dwight Muhammad Kawi from Camden, New Jersey, the Camden Buzzsaw.
That feels like I feel like that I've heard of that, but I don't remember anything. I feel like I've heard the name and everything.
Holyfield versus Kawi. Kawi, you spell it with a Q.
You talk about that
Q A W I, I think. How do you spell Kawi? Is that it? Q A W I?
Yeah, I found the other guy too, is Darren Wynn.
How do you have a Q with no U?
Different language.
Yeah, what is that? Q A W I.
English rule.
Qua. Yeah, what Q always has a U, right?
In English, yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
You want to see the K?
Yeah.
What, seems like, that if you way. Start with a Q. See if you get into that. Yeah, see, this is, he would fight real low. He was just a tank of a dude.
Yeah.
And he was like all like bobbing and weaving and always ducking
and
under.
Big punches.
And this is Evander Holyfield fresh out of the Olympics. He had had a few boxing matches, but wasn't the Evander Holyfield that we think of when he won the heavyweight title.
Right.
And this is also before he started training with Mackie Shillstone. And Mackie Shillstone put a lot of muscle on him. Made him a lot bigger. He was a 195 pounder back then. So, like, see how much thinner he is?
Yep.
But see, like, this is the style of Kawi, that bobbing and weaving style. See how Evander's having a hard time hitting him?
But yeah, you move your head, protect your body when you're that small.
And he was giving you all forehead, and it was a big old bald forehead, too. So he's just like, he's like coming at you all forehead first. Just a real skillful old school boxer, though. And them socks, old school stripes on the calf.
Pull them up.
All the way up. I still love watching these old boxing matches. This is something I really miss, man, that boxing used to be on TV. Wide World of Sports.
Yeah.
You know?
They're showing actually Lomachenko, like the best of Lomachenko 2 last night on ESPN 2. Like it.
Well, he fights on ESPN.
Yeah.
You know, ESPN is doing some serious world championship fights. ESPN has really stepped up, and especially now that HBO has gotten out of the game, it's in a precarious situation. I don't know why HBO decided to get out of the boxing game. It's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah.
And after all those years of covering the greatest fights ever, HBO decided to just pull out.
Yeah, I know. The guy that started that, or not started, but the guy who's like the pay-per-view model creator, Mark Taffet, he left. And I don't know if that had something to do with it.
I'd imagine it has to be a profitability thing. I mean, I think that's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
It has to be that they were losing money. I mean, you got to think the production is huge, right? You got all these cameras and all this thing, and they're there live. They got to get the trucks, the production trucks. It's probably live sports is probably an extremely expensive thing to pull off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
But they were the best at it. Lampley and Kellerman. I mean, fucking commentary. Roy Jones Jr. doing commentary with them sometimes. Andre Ward. You know, they had some of the best fights ever, the best team ever.
I like Roy Jones Jr.
I loved Roy Jones Jr. Awesome. I'm trying to get him in here, too.
Shit.
You know, because do you know what's happening with him? Nope. That Michael B. Jordan's talking about how he could box Roy Jones.
I love your reaction. Yes.
It's hilarious.
Yes, that's funny.
I love a cocky, like robust young man who's delusional.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, you gotta add that caveat.
He's delusional. I mean, he's a fucking beast. If you look at his body, right?
Right.
Michael Jordan is just jacked, full six pack, built like a Greek god. But son, stop it.
Creed's a movie. It's a movie, man.
I know you felt good hitting those pads. I know you look good. Look at him. Roy Jones Jr. will light you up like a Christmas tree in Times Square.
Why is Dennis Rodman in this corner?
I don't think that's Dennis Rodman.
I know.
Like it's his brother.
He looks just like
I yeah, mean, man. He's jacked for sure. He looks good, but listen, it'd be a terrible disaster.
Check out my segue. Like, if he thinks he's that tough, he should come fight in PFL for $1 million.
Ah. So what is the deal with PFL and the $1 million thing? Like, what do you, is it for each individual weight class? You
yes.
$1 million?
Yeah. So wow. on New Year's Eve, there's a $10 million prize pool. All the winners, the six winners of their championship fights, get $1 million.
Wow.
So three fights for $1 million because of the playoffs fights, right? The playoffs are cool too, though, because once you make the playoff, if you lose in the quarters, that's a guaranteed 50. Mm. If you lose in the semis, that's 100. And then the finals are the winner gets $1 million, the loser 200.
Still good.
Still good money, right?
I'm happy to see how good Vinny's doing. Vinny Magalhães is a beast.
He's a completely different guy, man.
He is. You know, he always had some of the best jiu-jitsu you're ever going to see in MMA, period.
Yeah, yeah.
But then his striking wasn't up to par, but now it is.
His striking was good. I mean, he won two fights because of his striking, yeah. One with strikes and one by setting it up with his striking, yeah. You know? Vinny, he's really working at it. He says he claims to be training four times a day for this, and he looked that way. He didn't get out of the first round. Like, each fight got longer, and the longest fight was, like, 2 minutes 33 seconds or something like that for Vinny.
Look, his jiu-jitsu is on another level. I mean,
yeah.
Vinny Magalhães is one of – just forget about MMA. He's one of the best in his weight class on the planet Earth, yeah. In jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's a monster. Do you ever see when he fly an armbar at Pay to Pano?
No.
Dude, when you fly an armbar, a world champion like Pay to Pano, I mean, Vinny just – They tie up, and Vinny just throws his 220-pound body up in the air and snatches his arm out of nowhere, flips him over on his back, and Pay to Pano tapped out. And he was like, fuck!
Vinny's a ninja.
He's a bad motherfucker, dude.
Yeah, his jiu-jitsu is really on. That's I think that is the fight that I'm – the second fight that I'm looking to the most,
yeah.
for the finals. Then that Ray Cooper, the third.
Dude, he's another one. 5'7".
Yeah.
Haymakers.
Vicious.
Why did they make Jake Shields fight that dude again?
It's just how it played out.
But that's crazy.
Being
how
the number eight
out.
Seed, right?
He gets smashed by Ray, and then he's got to fight him again.
Yeah.
And it's like he didn't have much time in between them
to improve, right?
It was like 5 months?
Not even 5 months.
4 months?
It was like, let me see. The first one happened in like July. The second was October. July, August, September. 3 months, yeah.
How crazy is it that Jake fought his dad?
Jake fought his dad 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And then when they were scheduled to fight the first time, Jake is the favorite because we know who Jake right. Shields is. We don't know who Ray Cooper III is. We don't know.
State champion wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Haymaker.
Hits like a truck.
Dude. I mean, he's just a tank of a man.
And when you see him in there, he doesn't look as small as he, like when I stand next to him and talk to him, it's like he's a short, stocky guy.
Yeah.
But then when he's in there against Jake Shields, I don't know, that persona, that attitude, that personality, he's coming forward and Jake's backing up and it makes him look bigger than he is.
Well, he's only 5'7", but Jesus fucking Christ, he hits so hard.
Yeah, he does.
He's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And he's got crisp technique. Like, it's not just like throwing wide, looping, fucking ridiculous punches like Ricardo Mayorga or some shit that if they hit you, you're fucked. No, he's throwing everything with great technique. He's a monster.
I mean, he's been my biggest favorite this season, like just watching.
Well, he's unquestionably world class, and so is Vinny, and that's one of the more interesting things about today's climate. I feel like with Bellator, with the PFL, absolutely with ONE FC, yep, you have world class fighters in many organizations. It's not just the UFC, and these guys can all come over and compete. I mean, it's essentially at the top of the heap right now, and basically you got Lance Palmer,
yep,
you got these guys in almost every organization that I feel like can compete with the best in the world in any organization. It's getting pretty even now, much more so than it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's weird though because all of these things happened in the past. We had Pride, we had Strikeforce, you know, the WEC, and then those things got absorbed.
Yeah,
right. And then all the best guys ended up in the UFC, and it's like, well, all the best guys are here now, and like now these other organizations, one was still around and one was always not a threat, but always had quality fighters. You know, now we know that the one, there's some really legit guys over at ONE. Then we got Askren coming over. Well, now the PFL's starting up. Like, guys like Vinny, his career, like, he's a different guy now.
Yeah.
Like,
with the fight, I think he can compete with anybody at 205.
Exactly.
I really do.
Like, it's a very different story for a lot of guys. But now what happens when these guys in the UFC, the number 8th ranked heavyweight in the UFC, sees a guy make $1 million?
Exactly.
And he's like, I would, and he's thinking to himself, I'd fuck that guy up.
I love it. It's good. It's good for everybody.
Yeah.
Competition is great for the sport. It's great for the athletes. It's great for the organizations because the organizations, whether they like it or not, it's going to make them pick up their game.
Yes.
It's going to make them step up.
Some people don't like to pick up their game, Joe. Some people like to be they just like to be comfortable.
That is not life.
That is not.
That is not life.
No, it's not.
Life is pick up your game.
Man, there is something I wanted to show you that reminded me of why I need to pick up my game. I was looking through my phone a couple months ago, and I have this video of my dad. I'm going to show it to you.
Oh,
I
had
to turn this down. But I'm just going to go straight to the end, because that's the coolest part.
Do you want to send it to Jamie?
Yeah, I can do that. I'll.
Can you airdrop it to him?
I can airdrop it to Jamie.
I love technology.
For the Mac one.
I see young Jamie's MVP.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Bam.
There we go.
Jamie, what are you going to call yourself when you hit 50?
What's Little Wayne going to call himself?
Best answer ever.
And I didn't name myself. You did.
Sorry. That's right. I named you. It's true. It's a good point.
But you got to go through. You got to go forward some through some of it. But yeah, like just reminded of like some of the things in my life. I've been kind of.
So what are we going to see? What is this?
So my video? My dad danced limbo, right? My dad was the baddest limbo dancer on the planet.
Really?
And he did some crazy stuff.
You might have needed to try it again. It didn't, I think when you...
Oh, probably when I closed my phone?
Yeah, it stopped.
Okay. There we go. Waiting for Jamie to grab it. And I'll leave it open. No, my dad used to dance limbo, and...
Limbo's when you go under the stick,
yes,
right?
Yes. And I don't want to ruin it,
right?
But he was the best.
And
he
used to tell jokes also. What year is this
video from? Like, 88.
Oh.
Like the year before he died.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. It just reminds me of some of the things. And my family, anytime I did something that I thought was cool, they would just be like, Yeah, like, so what? Your dad would do that kind of. Like, it's like fuck. Like, I could never get out of his shadow. But
this is your dad?
That's my dad.
Oh shit. With right? fire?
Yeah.
Damn, how the fuck is he doing that? That is insane. Right. Dude, that's insane.
Yeah, he did this for like tons of people. He did it for everybody wanted to see him do this. He did it in front of Mandela, he did it in front of the Queen. You know?
Look, he's gonna go under it there?
Yeah. But it gets better than this. Hold on.
How the fuck is he doing that? You know what kind of core strength that takes?
Yeah.
Blowing fire?
But that's this insane. Right here, now this is where it gets ridiculous. This is like, I see this and I'm like, yeah, that's my dad.
Like, he's gonna go, what? So this is on fire, folks, and this thing is, I'm not bullshitting, and he's got two flaming pizzas in his hand. And he's like, that might be, what, 13, 14 inches off the ground? And he's going under it. That's insane. And he's spitting fire while he's doing it. Holy shit. You weren't joking.
No, my dad was a badass.
That's crazy. How crazy is looking at this old VHS footage? Right? Digitized. It's not that long ago, man.
No.
And that's a different world.
And that kind of thing, my dad kind of... I mean, I was always with him. I used to love being with him. You know, he's like my best friend. I remember I was telling my son this story about him. So I had this thing with my kid, and I'm recording this conversation with me and my son. And I'm like, what would you do if you could go back in time? And he's like, what? I was like, if you had a time machine, you can go anywhere. Where would you go? He's like, I don't know, the 1900s. And I'm like, I grew up in the 1900s. What are you talking about? That was like last week. Right?
I want to grow up. I want to be in the 90s, Dad. What?
And then I told him this story. I was like, you know, I remember when I was little, my dad used to bring me on stage to do that. I was like 4 or 5 years old. No, I was like 4 years old. And he would pick me up and carry me under the bar, right? And one time he brings me on stage. He's like, this is my son. And he presents me and the spotlight's on me. And I'm like shy. And I'm like, oh. And he's kind of disappointed. You know, he's really disappointed in me that day. And then a couple weeks later, I was with him again. He's like, I was like, Daddy, can you bring me back on stage? And he brings me on stage. And he's about to pick me up. And I'm like... And then I moonwalk away, and I go back to my seat, and he loved it. He loved it, you know? And I told my son that story, and my dad was like, afterwards, we walked through the hotel to go back, and he has me on his shoulders, and he's just so proud. He's like, you see my boy? And he's like, you know? And I told my son about that, and my son was like, this is like 40 minutes later in the conversation, and my son is like, Dad, if I had a time machine, I would go back and hang out with you and your dad.
Wow.
And I was like, that was like the best moment of my life, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, because he didn't get to meet him, but it's one of those things, man. And just thinking about that kind of thing, kind of inspires me to want to do things where you know, kids, like, this is what my dad did that for me, and he made me excited about things, and now I want to do stuff where I can give something to kids. And
this is what you're doing with your book.
That's what I'm doing with that, and like, my thing is mixed martial arts, right? So this thing. This is the first book, The Talent Quest, and so it's about these characters.
Did you write all this?
So here's the thing: the concept and the characters came with me. I have a good friend. She's a psychologist, and she's in Australia. She wrote this story out, and then we have this girl that does the illustration. She's Nari M. She fights in one. She's fighting this weekend.
Oh, wow!
Right? So like. It's all about mixed martial arts and the psychology of it and working on all these different things. But we're going to put this whole program together that's all about teaching kids like discipline, self-respect, you know, self-resilience, all of these things, and put these stories together with these characters. And it's a whole lot of fun. I have a book for you, and
beautiful.
I want you to enjoy it with you know, with your little ones.
I will do that. Thank you, man. Yeah. That's awesome. So is this available for sale? Where can people get it?
So you can get it on Amazon. And Amazon, was it KDP? I have to read the thing in my phone. But it's it will be available. We were going to release it on the 15th of December. And you can get it by ebook, and you can also get it a printed copy like this.
So let me know when it comes out. It's the 15th of December. Remind me, and I'll tweet it.
Man, that'll be super dope.
When this PFL thing comes out, when is this? It's on New Year's, and it's on NBC Sports. So what channel was that on? Like, what is NBC Sports on DirecTV? That's one of them weird ones.
Yeah.
You got to find it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to watch the Olympics, right?
Is that what it's on? NBC Sports?
NBC Sports on
the
Olympics.
If you want to watch curling or like synchronized swimming,
taekwondo.
Some shit. Yeah, taekwondo.
Yeah, it has all.
Well, they're going to do MMA. They're talking about doing MMA
in the Olympics. Yeah, I heard about that.
It's right next to like FS1. It's FS1's 219. NBC's SN is 220. So it's like right in that channel.
What is NBC's plans for this? Is this obviously they're spending a lot of money because they're giving $1 million prize to three different guys.
Yeah, well, the PFL is its own organization, you know, so it's a partnership with NBC. Mm-hmm. So the PFL puts the money up for the fighters. NBC there's an influx of money coming in from NBC, but the PFL is in control of all of that. So I don't know what NBC's plans are. You know, but the PFL has big plans. They have a contract with NBC that I believe the contract is up this year, but of course they're going to renegotiate, you know?
Yeah.
They're going to work things out. And this is the only MMA product that NBC has. MMA is hot right now, so I don't believe NBC wants to let the PFL go.
It's the thing that seems to be the bottleneck with other organizations is the name. It's like, you know, the UFC is like the NFL.
Right.
It's like got this, it's the biggest name. The
UFC is MMA to a lot of people.
To a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then you hear about the PFL, you're like, what's that mean? What's Bellator mean? What is 1FC? What does that mean? You know, it doesn't mean anything. Just like, it's hard to get. I think Bellator is making some ground, you know, because they've been doing plenty of television events, and Paramount Network is a big network. A lot of people get a chance to see it. They've had good ratings, but it still hasn't caught fire.
Right. The thing with the PFL, yeah, the name, Professional Fighters League,
yeah,
like you hear PFL, you don't know what that means. You hear Professional Fighters League, you have an idea of what's going on. But
it's a good name.
It's a great name. And it's the name is representative of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a league. We have a regular season. So you fight in the regular season, you score a certain amount of points. You score points by getting finishes. You score points by getting finishes in the first round. You know, you win the fight, that's 3 points. You get a finish in the first, that's 3 additional points. Second round, 2 points. Third round, 1 point. And then at the end of the regular season, the top 8 seeds get into the playoffs, and you fight by your seed. So that's why Jake had to fight Ray Cooper again. Because Jake kind of edged into that 8th spot, and Ray Cooper was the number one.
Might want to rework that.
Jake might want us
to. I don't like the finish in the third round is worth less than the finish in the first. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's because it's a little tougher to finish in the third.
Yeah,
it's
not only tougher. Not only that, it's a finish. Finish is a finish.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't.
Like, sometimes it takes a while to finish a guy. Like here's a perfect example. Say you're fighting a guy like a Josh Thompson, you know, back in the day. Like, this is a tough fight.
Right.
These are two world-class fighters versus you fighting Henry Smith from fucking Albuquerque that nobody knows.
Right.
It's different. If you finish that guy in the first round, like, yeah, you've got to finish in the first round. But did you get a finish over a world-class guy? If you get a finish over a world-class guy in the third, that's worth more. I mean, it's depending upon who you're fighting and what style they are, how resilient they are, how difficult they are to beat.
But then it becomes more subjective when you're talking about the difficulty and matching up styles, and then you're starting to bring the odds into it from like I guess it wouldn't be betting odds, but similar to betting odds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So it's one of those things where there is no perfect way, but you take what you have and do the best of what you can.
I get it, but a point, the difference is in 2 points. Like, you get 3 points for the first round, but 1 point if you finish in the third? Fuck all that. Finish is a finish, man.
So bonus points for a finish is what is your...
Finish is a finish.
I made that argument. We had that conversation. It's like... But then again, then what do you do? How do you get bonus? What do you get bonus points for?
Here's a perfect example. How dare you try to diminish Yair Rodriguez's last-second KO of the Korean Zombie?
Yeah,
impossible.
No.
He shouldn't get all the points for that?
Yeah.
That was crazy. He literally knocked the guy out with 1 second to go with a no-look elbow. Pack. I mean, that's all the points. Give him all the points.
That's legit.
Yeah.
Like, you get so many points for a finish, whether it be first, second, or third round.
But finish is a finish.
Points for a decision. I agree. Because the one difference that we have is in a draw. Like, both guys get 1 point. I feel that if it goes to a decision, maybe you should get points. You know? Maybe you should get a point for surviving, but the winner gets more. And then if you get finished, you get no points, but the finisher gets all the points.
Well, it's definitely squirrely. Like, the idea behind it is squirrely. I get what they're doing. but I don't buy it.
I buy the fact that you got to get points because it's kind of like college wrestling. You know, you get team points. You get points for a pin. You get six for the pin. You get five for the major decision. You know, you get three for the decision. It's weird, but and it may be tweaked next year. There may
it's
be some tweaks.
It's hard for people to remember all that shit.
That's the thing. So we're constantly talking about it on air, you know, as the fight's going on.
Yeah, and but the people listening are drunk. They're like, what the fuck are they talking about? What is the point?
They can't do the math unless
point
they're
counting.
What?
Yeah.
But it's super cool because it changes sometimes guys' attitudes when they're in there. They changes what they do and how they respond in the fight, you know? There was a fight with Kyle Alencar and Mike Kyle. Right, both of these guys needed a finish to get into the playoffs. Either one of those guys gets a finish, they get into the playoffs. Josh Copeland's sitting at home, hoping that nobody gets a finish. The fight starts, and boom, Mike Kyle rocks Kyle Alencar, and it's like it looks like he's going to get a first round finish, make it into the playoffs. Kyle Alencar starts coming back. He gets on top in the second round. He looks like he's going to get the finish and make it to the playoffs. These guys go to the third. Both guys are gassed now. Nobody finishes. Josh Copeland jumps off his chair at home, and he's in the playoffs now. And now he's in the finals. Like, he was the 8th seed. He beat the number 1 seed. And then he beat the number 5 seed by KO. Now he's in the finals, and he has a chance to make $1 million. The number 8 seed is going in.
Interesting. Okay, you just made a good argument for it. I'm not sure if I buy it, though.
You buy it, Joe. You buy it.
Why don't they revamp the scoring system?
I would not be surprised if this offseason we do some brainstorming and change a few things, but I don't know if a whole lot is going to be changed. I think a few things will be changed, and next season's going to be even better, you know. And to a man, I've heard virtually every high level guy, every UFC level guy that I've spoken to, they said to me, are they going to be able to pay that $1 million? When they see that $1 million is real, then I want to see the reaction to that.
That's going to change everything. Once people get that $1 million check, you know, once you see someone, you know, you see Vinny Magalhães driving around a Ferrari.
In a Rolls Royce.
What the fuck?
Look at that motherfucker. I kicked his ass.
Yeah.
In that Rolls Royce.
I know. Yeah. You're going to see Ryan Bader sitting around going, what? The fuck?
He's going to be mad.
Ryan Bader's another guy who's transformed, right?
Yeah.
He's like a legit heavyweight contender now. He looks fucking good, man. The way he beat Mitrione, like, Jesus Christ.
And Mitrione, he's so solid. Mitrione has improved.
Yeah.
Mitrione's improved a lot.
Knocked out Fedor.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's a feather in your cap for the rest of your life.
Shoot, I sat next to Fedor, and that's a feather in my cap.
I know, right? You know? I was going to go to watch the Fedor's fighting Ryan Bader in L.A. They're fighting at the Forum. But there's a UFC that night. Can't go. I wanted to go see Fedor fight live.
Yeah.
Never seen him fight live, and I felt like that was a great fight. Him versus Bader, like, that's a great fight to see live.
I've never seen him fight live either. I have a picture of me, Fedor, and Tim Crater. Like,
really?
Like, just wow. Tim was fighting, and Fedor was giving me some advice on what to tell Tim.
What was he saying?
He's got to stay low, keep him moving, because he was fighting Chael.
Right,
but this is before Chael is Chael.
Right,
and he's like he's wrestler, like, and somebody's translating it too. But he's talking to me, and someone comes along and translates. But he's like, he's got to stay low and keep him outside. The guy translating sounds like this. He says Fedor say he keep him outside and stay low.
Damn.
But just having a conversation with that dude and sitting next to him, and he's not that big of a guy.
No.
Fedor is not that big of a guy. So
he's another guy who probably could be a middleweight.
Yeah. Fedor is awesome, though.
I mean, if you see some of the middleweights that are in the UFC, like Yoel was in your chair, sitting right there, and it looked like somebody dropped a giant iron sculpture of a superhero and put it. It didn't even look like he doesn't look like a human. He's so big, dude. He's like 220 plus, just jacked. Everything, neck, shoulders, back, just jacked. You're like, that is a heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, if you sit him next to Fedor, way bigger than Fedor.
Yeah.
Yet he fights at 185.
But he's also so jacked and ripped, and he's like my age.
It's incredible.
Like, but he's not like he like you can be my age and be ripped. Like I am if I take off my shirt, but I don't want to embarrass you right
don't,
now.
Don't,
so.
Please don't. Thank you.
But like the way he is, he's ripped like a 25-year-old.
He's ripped like a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's a freak of all freaks. Yeah. Like he like you see his body in the ring and you go, first of all, how did he make weight? That's what I always think. Like when even when he steps on the scale, like back before we had the early weigh-ins, when we had the weigh-ins at the actual time of 4 o'clock, he would step on the scale and make weight. And you're like, how is that 185 pounds? It doesn't even make sense. He looks like he's 200 pounds. Easy. Plus.
That same thing happened in the match with Conor and Floyd. When Conor was getting on the scale.
Yeah.
Mayweather's promoter was like, he's not going to make the weight. He's not going to make the weight. But I don't know. There's some guys who, you know, especially MMA guys are bigger than boxers.
Yeah.
You know? So it's one of those things. Like, Yoel has that down. He is huge. But that dehydration hits. And that's probably why he sucks.
Lockhart talked about it. Yeah. Look at the size of that dude.
That guy's like 42 years old. 43.
He's so big. He's so jacked. And unparalleled wrestling skills, too. Yeah. Oh, shit. Yoel Romero versus David Branch is booked?
I don't know.
What is that? Click on that shit.
That might not be. This is could be older.
It might be new, though. Click on that shit. What do we got? What is this? UFC on Fox. This is old. So that never happened. Right? That never happened.
I don't remember it happening.
No, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I typed in Yoel versus Fedor, and there's a picture of them matching up.
Yeah, that whole 185-pound division is kind of crazy because they're promising if Stylebender fights Anderson, they're saying to Anderson, if you win, you get a title shot. And everybody else in the division is like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Like, do you think that that's like some trickery to get Anderson to fight Stylebender?
That's exactly what I think it is. That's exactly what I think it is.
Because did they offer Stylebender a title shot if he beats Anderson?
Dan Hooker, I don't believe so. And that Dan Hooker posted that on his Instagram, and I like Hooker, and I just had to say something. I was just like, look, we know that Style, and my thought was, we know when Stylebender wins this fight because I really believe Stylebender is going to win that fight. When he wins this fight, he's not going to get that title shot. And for me, as a former fighter and knowing who Anderson is and what he's done for the sport and for the UFC, I'm just like, I feel like that's so. It's disrespectful, if you ask me. That's my opinion. It's an opinion. It's mine, and I stand by it. That you know, we want to make this young guy a star, and we're gonna sacrifice you to the wolf to get that done.
But Anderson still feels like he can compete at the highest level.
Man, we all gonna feel like we can compete. If you put enough money in front of me, I will fuck Khabib up. Right? Right? You put something in front of me that I really want.
Right.
Like, that's the thing.
He give you a goal and give you a time period to train and prepare for it. Yeah. Anderson's what, 43 now?
Yeah. So that's
it's not
the thing.
Outside the realm of possibility. He's the same age as Yoel or close to it.
Yeah. It's
Yoel's
no,
at least 40.
Yoel's at least, yeah.
He's at least 40. He might be 41. I mean, it's not. The problem with, and then Anderson, when he started failing drug tests, you're like, okay, so he's probably struggling. He's trying to get that edge, you know, trying to recover in training. So he's taking a bunch of weird supplements, and some of them are tainted. And
I bet you if you go back to, just go back to what you used to do. Go back to what it was you did when you became the Anderson Silva that everybody loves. You know, before he got to the point where, like, before the Forrest Griffin fight,
mm-hmm.
because I believe that's when it started to decline for him. Yeah, he still looked good and he still performed well, but he got away from the fundamentals. You know, in that Forrest Griffin fight, he was able to take Forrest out without the fundamentals, moving his head, doing these weird things, and just popping back. Fundamentals are what's the strongest thing in the game.
For sure. That fundamental, the Forrest Griffin fight's an interesting example too, though, because Forrest had been KO'd twice in training for that fight. Like, he had no business being in there.
Yeah.
They really, and he just couldn't take a shot. Which is another thing I want to talk to you about. Tito Chuck.
Yeah.
Well, as a guy who's retired, who had an awesome career, and you're watching that, and you're seeing a guy come back at 50 and get stopped like that, what did that do for you?
You kind of knew that, well, I felt that Chuck shouldn't be taking that fight. Right. You know, Tito's been competing. Tito's still in there.
Yep.
And then when they stepped in, as soon as they touched up, it's like, yeah, Chuck shouldn't be in here. He looked, that's the first time he looked that much smaller than Tito. He didn't look the same size as Tito. He didn't look comfortable. He didn't look as coordinated. Like, Chuck was always a little quirky and awkward in his movement, but he didn't even look like Chuck Liddell.
Right.
He looked like a shell of Chuck Liddell. And
did
as a person,
you ever see him hitting the pads, like recent video of him hitting the pads?
No.
Dude, it looked terrible.
Yeah, see?
He said he was just warming up. Like, he had talked to Brendan Schaub about it. He says, I always look bad when I'm warming up. But I'm like, it's not just that, look, it looked like his balance was off. Like,
I get that. I would see if I would have saw that beforehand, I still wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in that because, like, I remember being in a locker room before I fought Hermes Franca the first time in the UFC, and Nick Diaz was in my locker room, and Nick's hitting pads, and he's about to fight Robbie, and he's hitting pads, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna knock this motherfucker out, yeah, and I'm like, not the way you're hitting those pads. Like, he didn't look sharp, he didn't look like he had any power, and then he went out there and knocked Robbie out.
Well, he probably was just warming up, though, right? Like, sometimes when guys are warming up, they're just trying to get their body
moving. Yeah.
They're not really trying to look like a fighter.
Right.
They're not trying to look, like, sharp, like they're going to be inside the cage.
And, yeah,
Chuck won, see if you can find that. Chuck Liddell hitting pads. It's different. It's different because it's like his balance looks off. His coordination looks off. It just doesn't look good. You know, it just – there's a – you know, here it is right here. Take a look at this. Watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like it has no pop, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to watch, right? It just looks like, see how he throws that kick and leans back afterwards? It just looks off. There's a real issue with someone who's had that many KOs. You've been KO'd that many times. Like, your brain's been scrambled that many times. Like, how is the connection between your muscles and your mind?
Yeah, goosebumps.
Neurologically, it makes you uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, it does. Like, I mean, and that's Chuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
One of the greatest of all time.
I don't know. I don't, and I at 49 also, or 50, that's, there's a point.
Yeah.
You know, I almost feel like I would do it again for certain, I'm not trying to be a world champion. I'm not trying to get to Khabib or Dustin and those guys, you know, but like Joe Lozon, Diego Sanchez, somebody that's like from the same era, at least a part of the era that I was in, somebody like that, you know, somebody who I have respect for, and it's going to be fun and something, but like I'm not, and I guess that's what Tito and Chuck is, but also Chuck, you beat him twice.
Yeah.
You know,
he beat him twice by knockout, but I think he just felt like he always had Tito's number. But this is the problem, is like Tito wins now.
Yeah.
Right? Like the guy who he never wanted to win now wins.
Yeah.
The guy who wouldn't fight him when he was the champ now is the winner. Like when it all said and done, Tito KO'd him. Yeah. And he KO'd him more soundly than Chuck ever KO'd Tito.
Yeah.
Because when Chuck KO'd Tito, he basically beat him down and then Tito covered up, but he was conscious.
Right.
Like,
right. Chuck went
Tito
to sleep.
Put Chuck out. He put him out. And, you know, I mean, it was a good shot for sure, but it just seems like you're dealing with a guy whose brains are, you know, it's just he's been scrambled too many times.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that they made that fight?
I am surprised that the commission let the fight happen.
Yeah.
Yes, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that Oscar De La Hoya and Tito Ortiz came together and said, let's get Chuck to fight me.
Right.
You know, I'm not surprised about that at all.
Do you know that they said it was only like 25,000 pay-per-view buys?
That's what I heard. That kind of sucks.
That's crazy.
It's horrible.
That's so low. That must have cost everybody money.
Like, I have more Instagram followers than that.
It was a hard sell, and the undercard wasn't so good either. It wasn't like there was a lot of like big names on the undercard that's going to draw people in where they're going to go, well, it's going to be great fights no matter what. You know?
Yeah. The undercard was not that great.
No,
you know, you saw the whole show?
No,
because that's right.
I didn't know who Derek Wynn was.
But the undercard was not great. And then the Tito Chuck fight. I mean, Tito looks like the much better striker, much more accomplished striker in that fight. And like
crazy.
Tito Ortiz knocked out Chuck Liddell. That's like a phrase I never thought I would hear, and it'd be real.
But isn't it also the case of not just Tito remaining active and staying competitive?
That's exactly what it is.
It's that too, but it's also Tito's skills got better.
Yeah.
They definitely got better. Jason Perillo is an awesome instructor. I mean, he's a fantastic boxing coach, and he really tightened up Tito's hands and all of his techniques over the course of the years they were together. And the last time Tito and Chuck fought, iPhones hadn't been invented.
Yeah.
Think of that shit.
Yeah.
You know, no iPhones. People using Sidekicks. Remember those? Remember those things?
I remember that. I remember that.
Flip up the keyboard and everybody thought they were slick.
Yeah.
That was the last time they fought.
It's a different, and MySpace was the thing.
It's a different world, man. It's just sad to see it go down like that where, I mean, it would be one thing if it was a good fight. If like Tito looked like Chuck looked like Tito, because Tito looked good.
Yeah.
Chuck did not look good.
Right.
They both looked good and they put on their best fight and then Tito wound up winning. Good for him. But it wasn't that. It was one guy was a shell of himself.
So what kind of fight for Tito or a rematch for Tito would make sense to that you think would sell? Is there one?
Tito versus Chael will sell a little bit. I mean, he's been calling Chael out, saying, I want to kick your ass, but I think that was probably before the pay-per-view numbers came in. And then they're like, oh, Oscar De La Hoya.
Chael's like, nah.
He's probably got 15 voicemails on Oscar's phone. Oscar ain't calling back. Oscar's just sitting there going, fuck. Tito Ortiz willing to postpone retirement to kick Chael Sonnen's ass again. Yeah, see? But the thing is, he's going to try to do that with Oscar and Golden Boy, and that's going to sell 13,000 pay-per-view buys. Nobody's going to buy that.
Well, I mean, if Chael gets in on the marketing, somebody will buy it.
Look, if they could figure out a real competitive fight for Tito against someone who's got a big name, and I don't know who that big name would be, but he could still sell some.
Did you see the there was somebody posted these, I think Renato Laranja posted these two videos of Tito where it was like somebody was asking him, how does he feel about this fight with Chuck? And he's like, I'm a much better fighter than I was 12 years ago. I'm a much better fighter. I'm bigger. I'm stronger. I'm younger.
He said he's younger? Tito gets a little flustered with the mic.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to outlive his kids, too. Like, dude, that's the worst thing
to
do.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He also said, the guy was like, so who's making the money off of the pay-per-view? Is it just you? Is it all the fighters on the card? Or is it just you and Chuck? And he's like, yeah, it's me, myself, and Chuck. We're going to make the money off of the pay-per-view. You know, he just gets flat and he just powers through these things.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not a talker's business. It's a fighter's business.
Yeah.
It's weird. You know, you're asked to be several things. And when a guy like Conor comes along or a guy like Colby Covington. Oh, that was the other thing I want to talk about. They're talking about Colby not fighting Tyron for the title now. And then Usman leapfrogging over Colby, who's the interim champ.
Didn't they strip Colby?
Did they strip him?
I believe Colby was stripped.
Maybe they did strip him. Yeah, maybe they did strip him, which is also weird.
Which is weird because like that should have been Tyron's first fight back from that, exactly. From that shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the interim is for, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's if it's not, then what's an interim for? Unless if they stripped him, that's the only reason why I could see saying Usman. But also, that's another thing where I think it's probably negotiation tactics. It's like the Nate Diaz-Dustin Poirier thing.
I
remember looking this up, and someone was trying to correct me last time I did. It was supposed to be, which I don't know if it actually happened, when the fight happened with Tyron until when that fight happened, he was supposed to be stripped. Mm-hmm. But he's on the website, he's still listed as the interim champ.
Well, it's a good move to keep him the interim champ if they decide to fight, because then it's champ versus champ. You know, if they do decide to make that fight. I feel like on paper, at least, financially, it's a good fight. Because, like, Colby talks so much shit. It's like, it's worth... You know, it's worth putting together just for that because people don't know who Usman is as much. But Usman's a nightmare for anybody.
He is the biggest, I believe, biggest threat to Tyron right now.
Solid wrestling, solid striking, conditioning, everything. Super strong. Yeah. And just has been on a tear and has gotten better with every fight. Yeah. He's been proven, has gone through the trial by fire inside the octagon.
Exactly. Like Colby has the wrestling, submission awareness, at least. His offensive submissions aren't the best, but he can finish you. And his striking is competent, but he has no power. He's not going to hurt Tyron.
Interim title holder.
Oh, okay. He still has it.
Yeah. So they didn't strip him. They decided to keep him. But who knows? They might have just not
see that guy,
the
Kevin McDonald.
They changed the website.
He was one of my students.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. He's a great ref.
Yeah, he's a good ref.
The Kobe thing is interesting. You know, it's like his fight against Rafael Dos Anjos. Like anybody thought he wasn't for real. Like you see that fight, he beat the shit out of Dos Anjos. Yeah. Wow. And his conditioning is incredible. I mean, that is one of the big things about that dude is his conditioning. It's off the charts.
He doesn't get tired in the gym.
He does
either.
Not get tired. He's a fucking animal.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that makes that fight interesting with Tyron. Can he push Tyron? But can he survive?
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
See, Dos Anjos is more of a volume striker at 170. He's not going to knock those bigger guys out. But Tyron would knock out anybody. So I want to see that fight.
And the thing with Colby, like the last time I trained with him, it's been about a year. But at that point, he was hard to miss. You know? Mm-hmm. For me, I know I'm a striker, but Tyron, like Tyron's got good crisp boxing, but he hits so hard.
So hard.
He's
so fast,
so
too.
Strong.
He's so fast. Like his straight right hand is just. I remember when he fought Carlos Condit. He hit him with a lead right hand, and I was just like, whoa, did somebody like remove some frames from that?
From reality?
He crossed over so fast. Yeah. Like his distance, like he closed the distance so quick.
He's explosive. He's so fast. I don't know. Tyron's a real champion. You know what I mean? He's a real champion, and the not getting the credit that he deserves for a long time, that bothers him.
Well, he's in a handful of the greatest welterweights of all time now, in my opinion. You got Matt Hughes, who's a legend. Yeah. You've got, of course, George St. Pierre, yeah. Robbie Lawler, and then Tyron, who knocked out Robbie Lawler. Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, he's right up there. Yeah. And as these wins pile up, you make more of a case of him being the best welterweight ever.
Yeah, Tyron, with that being said, he's beaten a lot of the guys in the division, but he needs, like you said earlier, he needs a fight like a GSP.
Yeah.
He needs something where somebody else is established, because with him coming in and taking out Robbie and all these other young guys, they're proven amongst themselves and amongst each other. But a lot of the, like you said, nobody knows Kamaru Usman, right? And Usman, he's a threat.
To everybody.
You know, he's been wanting Colby. He's been wanting Darren Till. He wants everybody because he wants that shot at the belt.
Yeah,
and I believe for real, he's the biggest threat to Tyron. But Tyron could win that fight. Also, can win it convincingly, and then it means nothing to the world who Tyron wants to respect what he's done as the champion.
Yeah, in that case, that's one of the reasons why I think the fight with Colby makes the most sense. I think it'd be the most controversial, highest profile, because Colby will talk mad shit.
Yeah.
Tyron will get really angry, and if he beats him and smashes him, then it steps up him and puts him in a, and then in the meantime, I mean, Till's not going to fight at 170 anymore. Till's moved up to 185.
Okay.
So, like, but you still have a plethora of killers in the welterweight division. I mean, you can make a lot of matchups.
But the Colby fight also could help Tyron get over, too, because Colby's going to talk a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's disrespectful, and people like to see those guys get stopped.
It's true.
I know.
It's true.
So, that's
prediction?
One.
You like to see those guys get stopped, not just get beat.
For Tyron to win that fight, for the most part, he has to stop Colby.
Yeah.
You know, because Colby's not going to quit. And in the fourth round, he's going to step on the gas.
Yeah.
You know? And if Tyron can't keep up, then it's going to be a problem.
Eve Edwards, I got David Goggins here, too.
He's
here next. So anything else before we get out of here?
The only other thing was the ketone meals. Like, those things are awesome. They want to make an elk meal, and they want to talk to you about it.
We'll talk about that afterwards.
For
we'll talk
sure.
about that off. So what is that company? What is it? Ketone?
Ketone Bodies.
Ketone Bodies.
The Ketone Meals. You can look them up online, Ketone Meals online.
So you're working with them?
Yes. They've been sponsoring me, and they've been sending me good stuff to my house.
Beautiful. We'll talk. Eve right. Edwards, thank you, sir. Always a pleasure.
Right.
PFL, New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, NBC Sports. Check us out.
Bye, everybody.